7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Herzlich willkommen bei Zielgruppengerecht, eurem Podcast rund um Digitalisierung, Zielgruppen und Tech im Recruiting. Und hier sind eure Gastgeber, Robindro Ola und Jan Havlicek.
Diese Folge wird präsentiert von Lizzie AI, der Plattform für strukturierte KI-gestützte Interviews. Lizzie AI hilft Unternehmen, vom Startup bis zum DAX-Konzern, große Kandidatenvolumen effizient zu managen und Pre-Screenings intelligent zu automatisieren. Das bedeutet, jede Bewerbung bekommt eine echte Chance. Fair, vergleichbar und ohne Bias. Unternehmen treffen bessere datenbasierte Entscheidungen und skalieren ihr Hiring, ohne Qualität zu verlieren. Und Kandidaten profitieren von flexiblen Interviews jederzeit und überall. Lizzie AI für besseres Hiring durch echte Daten. Mehr unter lizzie-ai.com.
Hey Robin!
Hey Jan!
Jetzt sitzen wir hier auf der wunderschönen Talent Pro für euch da draußen. Und wir zwei sitzen heute nicht alleine da, sondern mir schaut gerade ein junger Herr ins Gesicht, mit dem wir jetzt dann gleich auf Englisch sprechen. Und das ist Bill Boorman.
Hallo!
Hallo!
Hallo! Welcome!
So, yeah, nice, willkommen! So, I guess we switch into English now, or do you... You have any?
Ja, vielleicht Kontext nochmal. Wir sind auf der Talent Pro. We're currently on the Talent Pro Fair in Munich, and that's why we have a so famous guest.
Yes.
That was like it was very surprisingly like very surprised when Jan contacted me and said, "Yeah, we are not going only to do a podcast. We will do the podcast with Bill Boorman." I've seen you a lot, like on Zuzu, on other events. So it was a great honor for us.
Yeah, honor for me as well. When anyone wants to listen to what I have to say, I'm always honored. Genuinely, that's like, so it's very cool.
Bill, we are known as a tech recruiting podcast.
Yeah.
But in Germany, we would say we are a Laber podcast. We are just talking a lot of shit.
Okay. I would say I know that.
So my introduction is based on the lighter that I just gave you. Do you know who Helmut Schmidt was?
Yes.
Yeah, do you know him?
Yes.
He was the last person in Germany who smokes on television.
Yeah.
And so I needed to bring you that lighter and remember
to smoke on television. But it's Germany, so there's probably laws that we can't light a cigarette now, but I appreciate
it. York just told me, no, you can't smoke in there.
but I know exactly where I am now. Awesome. I'm in Germany for sure.
But Bill... the real introduction would be, you probably don't know, but I've met you back in 2013 on Zuzu in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And you had the speech or the keynote on the second day in the morning.
Yeah.
Everyone was still tired. So I was tired of the night, but
it was Amsterdam.
We don't need to hide anything. It was Amsterdam, and you just came, I guess, 5 minutes before your keynote, and you've blown me away. I had to think 2 or 3 days of what you said, because what you said was 10 years ahead. That it was just phenomenal. And the first question that I want to ask you is, from now on, 10 years, what do you see for the recruitment industry and for recruiters?
Well, there's a few things which would probably take the whole half an hour, so I'll try and give you the shorthand area. But the first of all is, if we're thinking in 10 years in modern technology, we're thinking too long, right? We have. If you would have been holding this podcast with me 3 years ago, that was before ChatGPT, right? And ChatGPT, although there was a lot of activity going on in AI and really the whole kind of agentic space, which has really changed things. It was really quite geeky conversation. You'd go to conversations and the talk about AI was quite geeky, and usually we were talking about automation rather than AI, right? And that was the argument. And then we got ChatGPT, and a million people started using it within 24 hours, right? Mm. So, and that was the first time we began to see that what we thought the future would be actually began to look possible. Mm. So I think talking in 10 years is like, is mad, really. I think you have to think in years, year blocks. Well, you know, talk to me about what's it going to be doing next year.
Yeah.
That's probably a lot more relevant. And there's some fundamental things which are happening. And I think we get caught up in the AI and technology, but we've also got a lot of society shifts going on in people. We're also now having the biggest challenge, and the biggest thing we're trying to address is the demographics. We're going to run out of working people in 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. And 15 years is a very short period of time, in reality. So we've got 15 years to figure that out. We're going to run out of people. Or we're going to run out of working people. The other thing that we have now, I think what we're experiencing now, is people coming into the workforce now, or the educated workforce, say 18, 19, are the lifelong connected generation, right? So for people like me, I'm a digital immigrant, right? You know, I was born without a phone. I was born without a mobile. I was born without digital. It's a very difficult world for my children to imagine in every respect. But we now have a workforce who have always been digital and have always had things like social media in the background and have always communicated and networked in a way that we perhaps didn't really understand. And I think we're beginning to see that now. I mean, even if you take something like the recruiting sphere, it seems kind of crazy that we are having heavy concentration on how we hire in TikTok, right? And when we talk about how we hire in TikTok and what we do, and it's a very credible major recruitment channel, is the same way as we talked about in Twitter. So what I try and do is take two things. So I think there are golden rules of, I've worked in recruiting, hiring, talent acquisition, whatever you want to call it, for 42 years, right? I started 44 years, actually. I started when I was 16. So there are golden rules of hiring that don't change the way in which you do things. There are certain basic golden rules, and they're learnt. And what the challenge is how do you translate those golden rules into modern technology and destination? So how do you keep the principles the same? You just might be you're just delivering it in a different way. So what I think is very exciting at the moment is trying to translate. I run some workshops and stuff for people to try and figure this out, which is old school for new cool is what we call it, right? So how do you figure out, how do you take these basic principles, which we know that are right, and translate them into a digital world? And what do they look like? And sometimes that's a scale question. We're doing it a million times instead of one. Sometimes it's a delivery question. It's a conversational question that you should always ask, except it's being asked contextually by an agentic agent in recruiting. So I think what the future looks like, number one is, this is the last generation of recruiters. At the end of this generation, recruiters are not going to, it's not going to be a role. It's not going to be a function, because it's not going to be a necessary function. Talent acquisition is what we've talked about, right, for a long time. Talent acquisition is not going to exist as a function, because it's going to become talent. By the way, the good thing is, this is really exciting. This is really positive, because what we're doing is, 80 to 85% of the work that we have done, that we've evolved systems and processes to do, is reasonably mundane task work, repeated. But we've needed people to do that because we haven't had anything to have the capability to do that. And what we're seeing now is that actually between automation and agentic work where it's carrying it and doing it. That's going to replace that. Now, if you take 85% of your job title away, in terms of what your day-to-day responsibility is, what you get paid for, if the acquisition bit gets automated in talent acquisition, it becomes talent. Now, the exciting thing is you take the skills that you have and you move them into larger things, right? So one is that you're going to be supervising and training the agentic agents. We will always need a human in the loop. There'll be a there's a legal requirement in the EU AI system that the automation is challenged. We don't know what the number is, but I think probably it's going to be something like 20% of the automated decisions have to be challenged in order to consider it, in order to consider a credible human in the loop. It's going to have to be trained. So it's the first time where your value as a recruiter, as a leader in HR or talent acquisition, is in what you know rather than what you do. It's not the work that you're doing, it's what you know, and that you intuitively know when you have to investigate and challenge. You also intuitively know how things need to be set up. So I think it's really exciting because it's taking away the heavy lifting, arduous. A lot of recruitment is actually logistics. Right? There is some human element, but most of it is, can you get two hiring managers onto a panel at 3 o'clock next Thursday? And can you get those people talking? And can you make sure each one of them is briefed? And can you get them to come back to you about a CV you sent them? Or can you get them to give you 30 minutes to draw up a job spec? And every job spec that they send you when they're hiring, you know you need to have an intake meeting because you need to go into depth and you need to find the boundaries of what the hiring manager wants. So all of those things really is what becomes automated and goes away to an agentic agent doing that work, right? And that really excites me. Now, what that also means is we start the natural progression. We've seen this happening anyway before agentics is the first area talent acquisition went into was internal mobility. Mm. And internal mobility in the beginning was done very much like external hiring, right? Mm. So it was who's capable today.
Resource management.
But once you start doing that, what gets tied into doing that is then internal mobility, career pathing. You start looking at people saying, okay, what's our skills capability? What's our workforce plan? All of these different areas which come into talent management, should we actually be dealing with the contingency workers? Actually, the agentic agents, one of the discussions at the moment, and I know where I sit on it, is should we view the agents as people and organise our team? When we're doing our workforce planning and our team, where's the skills? You look at things like platforms like GigDAI are very good at doing this, if you were building a team to do a project, some of those are going to be people and some of them are going to be agents. So where do you need the people? Where do you need the agents? And if you're going to select and recruit them and deploy them in the same way, that should probably be coming out of the talent acquisition team.
Mm.
Who's going, actually, I've got to hire, where do I hire an agent? Where do I hire a person? What's the agent? Because the method of that workforce design and that job description and that skills profile and what skills and capability do we match, how are we going to test and assess it, and then how are we going to manage it through guardrail and instruction and onboarding, they're all things that we've been doing for a long time, right, in one format or another. So I think it changes the dynamic of the way in which we work. And I'm super excited about that, you know. And if you say to me, you never have to take a briefing call again, you never have to chase a hiring manager again, you're never going to have the frustration of someone saying they're going to turn up for a meeting and they don't, bring it on. You know, I'm really happy about it. I'm really happy. Get that shit out of my life and let me get on with doing the real work. And all the things that we wanted to do, like candidate experience, like giving people time, treating each person as an individual, giving them a response, right? None of this has been things we have not wanted to do, but we've never had time. Yeah. We've never actually had time. So you bring me a technology, you bring me a workflow and a technology that gives me the time to do my job in the way that I have. What I mean, you know, any a recruiter's primary job has been rejecting people. you get, and it's been increasing. You get 1,000 responses, of which you're going to hire one, right? And you're figuring out how do we disposition people from this process? How do we consider them for the future? So everything's changing. So when people say, oh, there's not going to be any more, when I'm thinking about there's not going to be any more recruiting and people are all doom and gloom, and I'm going, look, this is the last generation. You're the last people who are going to have to deal with this shit because we're not doing it anymore. This is not the work that I want to be. This isn't the work I wanted to do. It's just the work I have to do.
I have a question.
I have a thousand questions.
Yeah, one key question is this estimation, this future is based on a very high AI adoption.
Yeah.
But we just measured Germany's AI competence. We evaluated 66,000 people.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, Germany is not ready for this future. So
Germany's massively ready for the future. You're just asking the wrong question about the problem. Right, this is really, really true. So let me give you an example. If we run a study, and this is a general thing. This isn't just Germany. It's just sometimes Germany amplifies it because you like to do things in a different way.
Germans are
German. Yeah. but it's a great place. It's a great place to do anything. If you're going to launch an agent, launch it in Germany, because if it goes there, it's going to go anywhere.
True.
And it's going to have the right guardrails and it's going to be compliant. But this thing about AI readiness, you know, it's things like... I'll tell you a really quick story because I know we're on the clock. There's a survey sent out. You will have read all this about candidates and people saying they're not comfortable with AI interviews. They don't want to do AI interviews. They're not doing that, right? And it's always like 60, 70% don't want it in the process, say they would walk away from the process. When Vogue launched an agent for interview and selection and released it for a deco. So it had a scale. Being a deco in Belgium, Simon in Belgium, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of interactions rather than a few. So enough to take a decent sample size. And we did it exactly the same way as we introduced chatbots maybe 10 years ago in that you had a choice. You had two buttons on the job which said, do you want to be assessed? Or do you want a recruiter to do it? 98% of the applicants chose the agent. 98%. And when you dig into why is that, because it's contrary to opinion and readiness surveys. It's like when you dig into that, what that is actually if it continues the workflow. So I'm applying for a job and it says, oh, do you want to do this? If I can continue that workflow without leaving, I'm going to do that if it's AI or if it's a person. If I ask a person to believe me, a recruiter to ring me back, I have two questions in my head. One, will they ever ring? And that's valid. That's valid. If I leave a message and say, please contact me, please talk to me about this job, probably I'm never going to hear from them again, right? So what's the point of doing that? So if I've got a choice between having the conversation and not having the conversation, it just happens to be with a robot, then I'll have it with the robot. I'll have it with the agent, right? So, and why I'm saying this in the context of AI readiness is the more we send out surveys and say, are you ready? Right, if you said to me, if you say to me now, right, and I live in this world, I'm working with this all this time. If you said, are you ready for an agentic workflow? Are you ready for an agentic work? I've got to say, I don't even know what it is yet because I don't know what they're going to invent tomorrow. I don't know what OpenAI are going to come up with. I don't know what Claude's going to do. I don't know when Trump's going to decide I can't have Claude, right? I'm living in this constant world of
But that's, for example, something we asked that too, and everyone is ready. No one said he's not ready, especially the male said they are totally ready. But we also looked at the skills you need to, like, professionally use AI, and those skills are nearly not existing at all, and especially for...
But I've got to challenge that, right? Yeah. I've got to challenge that because I didn't have any of these skills 3 years ago because they didn't... Yeah. I had the skill and the aptitude. Now, the difference is, I and I believe this firmly, you can learn AI.
Yeah,
sure.
Right? And you can learn, and sure. I see enough. So if I can go to any group of people, doesn't matter, if I go to any community, and I've done it, I've gone to a what's called a Women's Institute in England mm-hmm. of 60 to 70, 80-year-old women
yeah.
mm-hmm. who meet every week. And I've gone to sports clubs and I've gone to other places and I've asked them and said, what are the basic things you do when you organise, when you come together or whatever? And then I've taken them into something like NAN or Lovable, right? And given them access to that. And I've said, you don't need to code, you need its voice. So you're talking to it. You don't even need to be able to type. You just talk about what you want and how you want to do it, and then it's going to organize the workflow. I've seen everybody doing that, right? Now, if I would have taken any of those people and said, are you ready for AI? They would have gone, whoa, no, mm. no.
That's true. Now, imagine a country who likes to wait. And yeah. if you look at the AI space, it's evolving in an incredible speed. When do would you think or would you say there is a point of... actually, tomorrow you should at least look at it.
Well, I'll tell you where our biggest challenge to it is coming, yeah. right? And it's the last place we expected it. Yeah. And it's becoming really apparent in America, and it's not a Trump thing, right? Mm. It's not the Claude story. What this is the biggest protest at the moment is about data centers,
mm.
is around data centers. And if you talk to my children are 25 and 28, and if you talk with them, they are very concerned about AI, not from a security or privacy question, although they have them. It's actually from an environmental.
Yeah,
this is an
true.
Environmental generation who was saying. And in America, you know, they're needing to build data centers. You've actually got, at the moment, 242 cases in America, which is challenging the building of a data center. And that's built around water quality, the amount of water that's needed, the amount of energy that's needed. So I think our biggest challenge is actually going to be not one that we perceive at the moment, right? Our biggest challenge is going to be, can you build us a...
Such a big thing for Germany, because we're good in getting green energy.
Right.
Yeah, so we're in such a sweet
that's
spot.
For example, another thing, like this discussion hasn't arrived in Germany because they still not
yet.
Get the full impact of AI.
Yeah, because you haven't moved to that bit, right?
Yeah.
But that's the same as that's the same as everything in Germany, right? So what you have in Germany, this has been my view, and I've worked with German companies. I've had offices in Frankfurt, Munich and Berlin.
Yeah.
And I've worked with German companies probably for 25 years. So I don't have the stereotypical view of the German and what it's like. quite the opposite. I know the trains don't turn up on time, right? And if you talk to anyone outside of Germany, they go, trains are they go, oh, the trains are always on time. And you go, yeah, actually, they're not. they're not. Sorry.
Anyway. We are good in one thing.
Right.
Not being on time with the train.
No, we don't have a train. Right. But I'm using that as an example of if you ask someone outside of Germany... Yeah. of a stereotype of Germany, they'd be going, oh, it's efficient, it's reliable, it's this, that, and the other. You go, yeah, I mean, when you were building the airport, that was the worst in Berlin, that was the worst thing in the world, right? Oh, so there was no German efficiency about that. Yeah. So Germany's very different to how people perceive it. But what I believe, the work I do with Volt, which is well established in the German market, is... What Germany is, and this is where the bigger challenge is around AI, right? If you release a product now, if you look at Indeed release agentic workflow products, and they are, and the cadence at which products are being released and built is phenomenal. They, you know, they come out, they change, they drop them, they build, they do something different, because you can code and release a product very quickly. You don't need lots of developers, you don't need lots of money, you need the right amount of data and you can do it, right? So we have this constant speed of, the person who speaks best on this, by the way, is a German, Sebastian Demers, who's leaving StepStone. He has a fantastic blog. He has a fantastic blog on this topic about the speed at which you can build, and that actually that used to be the barrier to being able to scale things was engineering time and readiness, right? So you, what you're getting now in this world is a lot of world in beta. What Germany's not very good at is beta.
Yeah, that's just
right? It's not very good at something which isn't ready. You want out-of-the-box product. So if you look at other parts, and if you say what's the challenge for Germany, in my opinion, and my experience, it's that, and I know from selling and trying to move products here with Wonk and other people, it has to be 100% ready. It has to work. It has to be 100% ready. It has to be sure. Now, once you've done that, it's very difficult to churn, or you offset different benefits with different problems, right? Yeah. It has to be compliant. Mm-hmm. And we don't even really know. We do know what the EU AI Act is, but we don't really until we get a few court cases in the bounce, sure. right? Sure. Until a few people get sued. Sure. So all the things which make it hard to get that adoption in Germany, certainty about compliance, certainty about the law, and what that's going to look like. Now, I have a very good idea, and I think I'm about 100, I've been so far about 100% right on the EU AI Act. The EU AI Act is the best thing that's ever happened to AI, because the law is actually just good practice. It's just saying doing this well, human oversight, check, audit, yep. fairness, right? So I'm all for it. And I'm really looking forward to that becoming, and I think this will then move Germany forward much quicker in that adoption race when it's certainty and it's a European law. So when there is something which says, these are the law, this is the guideline, this is what you have to follow, yep. I think that's when Germans will say, we know where we're going. Yeah. Now, if you go other places, and if you look at the US or you go other places, that's where people are saying, we'll work this out as we go along. But we'll have a beta product. It won't quite work. We'll do it out of the box. Someone called Victoria Davies, right, writes a fantastic blog on LinkedIn. She is the CTO of HackerJob. They build, or Chief Product Officer of HackerJob. They build Archer, which is an agentic recruiting agent, went to 1 million ARR in 90 days, right? Unheard of, the volume of which they're dealing with and so on. Really, really impressive story. And what Victoria said is, we had a hackathon and we built a product and it looked right. It did all the things, the way in which we designed it, it did everything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then when we released it to people, they started wanting to do something different with it to what we wanted. And they started saying, oh, but we need
awesome
three people on this interview and we need this stuff, right? which is what humans do. So she kind of said, you know, we thought in a traditional engineering sense, product is ready, release it. She said, what we've discovered is you need these limited releases and you need to see what happens. I'll tell you a really interesting one, which I think is very relevant for Germany and other places. There was a story last week. I write for the AIM group, and there was a story that really caught my eye, was super interesting. And that's LinkedIn's hiring system. So when LinkedIn released their hiring assistant, it's in English, right? Which is what most engineering is. And then they translate it into other languages. So they wrote a very transparent, there's a lot of transparency in this space at the moment, which I really like if you follow. But if you actually want to know about LinkedIn, I'd recommend anyone, don't read any of the blogs, read the engineering blog, because engineers are really honest. They'll just go, it's shit, doesn't work, like, and they'll write about it, and they're the only people who can do what they do, so no one's going to fire them, so they can say what they want, right? And if you read the LinkedIn engineering blog, what you end up with, what this blog said was about workflow, and they said, we thought when we released Hiring Assistant, it was going to be like Google Translate. If we put it in German and released it, then Germans would be able to use it, and if we put it in French, French would be able to use it, and so on. They said, and what we discovered was it wasn't the language, right? One was courtesy in a language, the way which you speak to people, how many times you met, the cadence, how many times... If you have a message workflow, how many times is acceptable, right? And so they discovered, they said, particularly in Germany, that what was okay in the US, what was okay in the UK, and worked perfectly well, no one had a problem, people had a problem with in Germany. They start complaining about too many messages or totally wrong time of day and that kind of stuff. So they had to learn that and build a new set of guardrails, which were cultural guardrails rather than, and also courtesy of, do you call someone Mr., do you not call them Mr., do you call them Sir., do you use their first name? Like, all of these kind of things are culturally different, right? And I thought, and so workflow, so the things that recruiters did, essentially doing the same thing, which is get some candidates, get them hired, you'd think that workflow looks the same. Wherever you go in the world, it's the same steps, right? No. So they discovered that they needed to build in cultural workflows. Now, the other thing they said that was super interesting, I can relate to it. You know, when somebody says something, you go, I could totally see that. But you would never have thought it if that was your design job.
It's always when I came back home from SOSU.
Right.
You have to translate it into the German culture.
What's the German culture?
Yeah.
But what they said is, actually, then, if you go to Germany, you think then, okay, we've got this German set of rules. So that's okay. This is the workflow. This is what it looks like. These are the rules. These are the messages. This is the courtesy. This is the language. This isn't Google Translate. This is Google Translate of culture, not Google Translate of language. They said, but then once you get into the country, you discover the way in which they want to do it in Munich, because that's Bavaria, versus the way in which they want to do it in Frankfurt, because that's more Central Europe. Berlin is... Actually, most of the recruiters in Berlin are English or French or German, so they don't even want to behave like Germans. They want speed and efficiency, right? So what the LinkedIn hiring assistant has said is they've had to build these the capability for the workflow to evolve, to make everything available and let the recruiters develop it themselves. And I thought that was a fantastic lesson in how you evolve. And when they were saying it, they were saying... Yeah, so we built a German workflow, but nobody wanted to use it in Berlin. And you go, why didn't anyone use it in Berlin? They went, well, none of them are Germans. They're all English and working for Zalando and whatever company, right? Yeah. They're Dutch and da-da-da. So, but Munich, Frankfurt, Cologne, very, very, very different, very different cultures. Yeah. So this idea of having to evolve, and because agentic workflows do work, they don't record stuff, they come into contact with people, that is a cultural evolution that you have to learn. And you will never learn it until you put it in the wild, but you'll have difficulty putting something in, you know, if you are trying to sell it in Germany, you go and see a customer and you go, this is the product, we think you'll be about ready in 6 months. Do you want to let it loose on your customers? Yeah. You're going to get a resistance to that, right? Yeah. So I think we need that cultural change. I recommend everyone reads that engineering blog about hiring assistant, not for the engineering elements and the rules, but this bit about how different, you know, they genuinely thought, if we take this product from English, Google translate it into German, it'll be... in the German market. Germans are like, nine, we're not doing that. We're not playing.
Such a good lesson.
Yeah.
I have a thousand things in my mind. I don't know where to start.
Absolutely. You can start.
Two things in my mind that I don't know how to say, but you just talked about TikTok at the beginning, and now it comes for me into a loop, because TikTok changed not the culture, I don't know the right English word for that, it's more like mindset or adoption of technology. For me, I just had a speech about AI and job search, and I just told the people, have a look at TikTok as an app, how it interacts with the user, and now have a look at your career site.
And is
TikTok no, it's not the same, but TikTok changed the way how people interact with
Absolutely.
Media, I would say, or with an app. And we can't adopt that. And we do lose that challenge against generative AI as well. Do you know what I want to say?
I know exactly what you mean. But it's being able to evolve with the users, right? And I think this is the point. This is where people... And you've hit on something really here, where people are saying... And this is the way people understand. You've been at SoSu and other events. So a company will stand up there and they'll go, 60% of our attraction is through TikTok. Mm. We use these videos. Here's a nice video. Here's an ad. This is what we do. And people go, oh, that's really cool. We need to go and spend some money. We need to go and spend some euros with TikTok because it gets people in. And so they might attract people with a TikTok experience, but not give them a TikTok landing. Right? I used to compare it in the old days with social media. I can remember doing a career site overhaul for Bank of Ireland. Mm-hmm. I was involved in a consulting project. They brought in consultants. They made this fantastic front page career site in terms of navigation and how people could move about it, and they created a... Then it was a social media experience rather than where we are now, right? But this has been the normal evolution, which is how do you replicate the cultural experience of the technologies which you're using in a different environment? And I said to them, this is great. You've done a fantastic job of your career site. You've spent its money on it. No doubt you're going to win awards. Mm-hmm. No doubt about that you're going to win awards. So, but you've actually made it worse.
Yes.
You made your life worse. So why is that? So because you've got the same ATS.
Yes.
So you brought people in with a social experience. Now, how, what I compared it to in those times is you've got a hotel and you've made the lobby fantastic. Because you've made people come in
going, I'm going to have a fantastic experience. Or the
pathway
outside of
And as I start going up the stairs, I'm going, oh, this is a bit...
And it feels not right.
You can go this way further. Like, you can take the experience into the career side, then you have to take the experience in into the ATS. And then what we measured lately was, like, if you haven't the experience in your company, it breaks then in the onboarding.
If you don't have the experience in the work... Right. You know, if you don't have, if you build to hire agentically through agentic tools, say through AI tools, and you don't have work which is agentic, or you're not allowed to use certain tools in your work, or bring your own device, or you haven't thought about that cultural mismatch, you're creating a disaster. Right. Because the way in which you hire needs to reflect the way in which you work. Because if I'm an engineer, whatever I am, I expect that experience to continue. If you recruit me through a TikTok experience, I expect the working tools on my desk to give me a TikTok experience. I don't expect to go, hang on a minute, you've used like today's technology and now you're giving me...
Yes.
You know, and in reality, something that's 4 years old belongs in a museum. In reality.
But for me, that's the core and it's the basic of recruitment
I'll tell you a really good place for getting your head around this evolution of how people react with technology. It's in Germany. And I went there with my kids, and I subsequently try and go at least once a year. There's a history of games museum in Berlin. Right? And it is the best... business experience you could have.
I live right, like, 5 minutes.
Well, you should go in there every week.
He owns 5% of the...
You should go in there every week, right?
No, actually, my school, like, the school my kids go to, they go regularly.
They go regular, right? So if you look at that...
History of Games Museum.
If you go to that and you've got a different hat on, not just, oh, these games are fun, and isn't it funny, let's laugh about how... people used to play games and how they've evolved. If you look at the evolution of games, I mean, who would have thought you would have people making millions, making videos of people watching them playing, talking to each other, right? Or who would have thought you would build these communities of people who would games and fandoms, and that would affect culturally the way that people can work we you know, we look at it about how do we make work problems a game and deal with it in the same, apply the same mechanics, right? Mm. So when you go at the game museum, that's fantastic for, if you go through the evolution of games and you go and say, and there's a physical record of it. What did a game look like? What could you do? Did it involve other people? Was it a solo player? Mm. If you're weirdly autistically wired the way I am, I look at things like that and it's like,
I started with Atari.
Do you not look at this, right? But if you look at the way that games have evolved, very much reflects the way society's evolved, the way in which we communicate, network, the things that we do, the technology that we expect. So that's what I say to anyone is, you know, go to Berlin, go to the Games Museum, look at it through that lens and say, what have people done and where are we now? Where are we today? Let's go and talk to some kids about how they react and work on social media what's coming? How should we react? How should we interact with you? What experience is acceptable to you? Because that's going to be the way in which we're going to hire you, and that's the way in which we're going to manage you. That's what your HR, this is the experience you want to have. You don't want to have, and these last 10, 15 years have been the first time, the technology you have available to yourself is better than the technology that you work with.
Yeah.
Both in terms of methodology, control, what you can do, right?
Mm.
And that gap between what you have accessible to yourself, non-permission technology that you can use, and what you're allowed to use in your work is getting bigger, right? And that frustration level of, oh man, if I could do that in Claude, if I could just build this with that, I'd be... And I've got someone saying, no, you can't, because we don't use...
I just saw a very small documentation last week about a stone sculpturer.
Yeah.
And he said... So he got a 20-ton block of stone.
Yeah.
Some special stone. No, it was not marmor. Stone. And about 20 tons. And he just needed 8 tons to begin. So there was a machine cutting the small pieces. And the new thing now is they have robots from ABB.
Mm-hmm.
They're drilling into the last 4% of the sculpture. And the stone sculptor said he was skeptical at the beginning, but everyone hates the job from 20 to 8. Old machines, they do have that like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But the new part is the other 20%.
The accuracy.
And he said, that's so cool. I love this quote. Even at Michelangelo's age, he hated it. And he had a ton of people just bring that sculpture onto the last 2% where Michelangelo starts to work.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I said, okay, this is the way we need to work with generative AI. They do that job. You said everyone hates that. And
we
therefore,
that.
You
yeah,
the stone sculptor hated it as well.
Yeah.
And they even worked 3 months on that sculpture.
They're all like that, for the last 2%. I'm also a street artist. This is one of my hobbies. I'm called Beardo Art on Instagram if you ever want to discover me. And so I spend a lot of time with artists.
Oh,
right?
Nice.
And they fall into two schools, not dissimilar to recruiters. So you've got the ones who hate the concept of any AI. They fear. Mm. I mean, you've got a robot arm around there that does a caricature better than any caricature artist I've ever seen. And I've been to these conferences that have had people standing there.
A good
there
friend of
bed.
Mine is graffiti artist. He just wears his Oculus Rift
and
all the sketching from big
So the string man, Perspicier, who is the best string artist in the world.
Yeah.
He's one of my best friends. But he designs his string picture by machine. Now, there's a really good parallel, I think, for hiring and recruiting in the way in which we want to work. And that is when machines take over, handmade becomes a luxury. Right? And I'm going to tell you a story in terms of work because this is really important. And I was told this story by the person who did it, who was the head of innovation for McDonald's. I met this guy. Very, very lucky to meet him. We did some work together on some stuff, some recruiting HR things. But he actually ultimately got promoted to be the head of innovation for McDonald's, right? McDonald's Corporation.
Wow. Crazy.
One of the guys that I know. And he said, when we introduced the automated checkouts, the machine, you put your order up, right? He said, we thought that would reduce the number of staff we needed in a restaurant. Because, you know, we don't need people taking cash. And that would be my natural human reaction would be, are you going to replace people with machines?
Yes.
He said, we actually had to increase our headcount per venue by 20%.
Crazy.
Two reasons. Three reasons. One was, processing orders is much more efficient. You haven't got people arriving at the till, not really sure what to order. So the speed at which and accuracy with which the orders are coming, without the need of some conversation and some meaningless interaction.
Lost in the line.
And also, there's no dealing with cash. No dealing with cash giving you money, da da da. Plus, they can increase the experience by at least telling you how long it's going to be, which is the most frustrating thing when you're waiting and to tell you go and sit down for a minute. Right, so that was the first thing. So they needed,
especially when you're drunk.
Yeah, but then they needed to put more people in the kitchens. They needed to double the size of the kitchens because the processing of orders meant they were getting orders much quicker, and da da da. And people were expecting them to be ready and that kind of thing. They said, and also we then thought about it and thought, okay, how can we make the experience of a, it's limited, but how can we make the experience of McDonald's better? And they introduced table service. If you're going to get a long wait, we'll give you a number and you go and sit down, right? Very, very simple. Right? Because now I don't need these people on the till dealing with people. They can go and deliver, they can improve, they can enhance the customer experience, right? Yes. So that's a really simple example that people understand. And you think about that from a recruiting point of view of saying, if you could do, what are those things? What is the table service things that could come while you're all busy forming trade unions and being in resistance against AI and breaking the machine, right? Wrecking the printing press. It's history as long as we want. If we take that McDonald's story on a really simple basis, what are the things we could do that would make experience better, that would make hiring more efficient? And then what happens is it actually becomes a luxury that people are willing to pay for when they deal with a person. And we see this in service things now. The more automated service becomes, the more people are willing to pay a subscription or a premium to have a person at the end of the line. Right? And I'm seeing it. Places like CB Library, Lee said to me, first thing I had to do, double my number of customer success, because people said, you're the only company where we speak to people.
Yeah. As human, it's so hard for us to think the whole thing. Yes. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, but we see that all the time, that people are bad in thinking things through. But
yeah.
It's also difficult, but we have another challenge. Our time is over.
Your time's up.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Actually, I have to be very quick because my next...
There
will be no...
There's a robot coming in a minute.
Ah, okay.
And there's a robot coming in a minute to do this.
For him.
And even better. But,
AI podcast. I really want to build this, right? So you heard it first. Yeah. I want to build an agentic podcast where an agent interviews an agent. And watch this space. You'll have it within 3 months. Then start worrying about your podcast jobs.
It's just a hobby.
It's just fun. We have a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, it is.
It's a therapy.
Yeah. And we talk regularly to each other.
So from my side, I also say we were happy if we can do a round two. Perhaps not.
Whenever.
Yeah.
Whenever.
We will come.
Maybe with your agent.
I live on a Greek island.
I live on a Greek island. You're welcome.
Come and see me. I'm building a podcast studio on my Greek island. So come and see me.
Nice.
Oh, that's great.
Bill.
Been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
I really enjoyed
it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Ja? Dann machen wir auch einen Schuh draus.
absolutely.
Und ich habe viel nachzudenken. Ich habe mir so viel mitgeschrieben. I just wrote.
Yeah, it's just taking. He was just continuous dipping. And he doesn't know that we can transcribe the podcast.
Yeah, you can just transcribe it.
Yeah. Okay.
See you, bye.
Is that what you wanted?
Yeah. Awesome.
Das war Zielgruppengerecht von Robindro Ulla und Jan Havlicek. Du möchtest mehr erfahren? Dann schau jetzt auf www.diegrüne3.de oder Robindro Ulla und Jan Havlicek auf Xing oder LinkedIn. Und jetzt ist wirklich Schluss.